Morning. Business of balance. It's great to be in Central Australia. It's one of those places in the world that just lifts your soul. And the great thing, Centralians are optimists. I got in yesterday, the other day, in the car wash. You're in the middle of the desert and they've reserved two bays for washing mud. The NTCA exists to protect and advance the interests of its members, and the NTCA persists because its members are worthy, ethical, decent, hard-working people whose interests are well worth protecting and advancing. As an association, we work hard to do our job in an honest, professional, objective, focused, open and non-partisan way. While we're relatively few in number, we're stewards for a large and iconic part of the Australian landscape and psyche, and our fellow Australians trust us to maintain our country, our cattle and our standards, as well as feed them decent steak. So, to the business of balance, it's an accommodating title given that I found six or eight different dictionary meanings for both, so we've got a bit of room to move. I hope that this presentation will convince you that it is indeed a great time to be associated with the Territory Cattle Game, that a continuity of balance is essential to a thriving and a surviving NT and cattle economy, and the NTCA has a record of providing sage advice over the years, so ignore it at your peril. Industry performance and returns over the last 12 months have been at historic highs by any measure, and the future potentially rosy. And we'll hear more of this during the day. When David Warriner suggested this conference 2 years ago that we'd see $3 a kilo, he was rebuffed by the professional analysts in the room. That prediction now appears so conservative that Dr. Ainsworth is currently claiming that $3.90 is close enough to $4, so we should be buying him drinks. Northern Territory pastoralists manage a herd of some 2.1 million head of cattle over an area in excess of 700,000 square kilometres. Each year contribute over $600 million directly and over $1 billion indirectly to the NT economy every year. The investment by the Northern Territory pastoral sector in the Northern Territory on the ground is estimated at somewhere between $3.1 and $4.5 billion. The industry also contributes significantly to the R&D effort and marketing, jointly with the government, processors and exporters. Since 2011, in Indonesia, Southern Asia and China, the grass-fed industry in Australia through the transaction levy has contributed some $90 million. $24 million in marketing and market access, $27.9 directly into the live export program, about $4 bucks into SCAS and support materials, $1.9 into LGAP, and $6.7 million in productivity and welfare R&D. Been a further $38 million invested by grass-fed producers in the Northern Beef R&D program. So it's not by luck or quirk of history that every road train you see heading north, south, east or west adds more than half a million dollars to the NT GDP, but it's on the back of a long and significant effort and investment by many. And the NTCA has been an integral part of this. At the grassroots, through the branches, through regional advisory committees, at the North Australian level, through things like the North Australian Beef Research Council and the Industry Committee, nationally through CCA and its forums and others, and internationally through things like the Red Meat Partnership with Indonesia, trade missions and various partnerships with the Territory Government and MLA. To advance and protect the interests of our members, we shall continue to remain involved and informed at all levels, seeking at all times to enhance the long-term productive relationships with our trading and supply chain partners, consumers, the broader community, and other stakeholders. I'd like to acknowledge the significant contribution by many of our members, the government people, the MLA staff and everyone else that has helped to make this happen. It's a hell of an effort by a lot of people. In particular though, this year in the R&D area, I'd like to acknowledge the contribution of Keith Holdsworth from Avigo, who has committedly chaired the Catherine Pastoral Industry Advisory Committee and the Northern Beef Industry Committee since 2006. And I'd also like to publicly thank Dr. Wayne Hall and Dr. Michael Quirk, who managed the Northern Beef Program with experience and professionalism for a similar period. Can I also record our thanks in a general sense to Dr. Peter Barnard, who for many years in MLA was a source of analysis and economic wisdom. It's not two words I often put together. Many years ago, a bloke called Ginger Packsaddle, an old man from Amambidgee in the VRD, defined the Territory Rangelands as for cattle, for country, for people. For cattle, for country, for people. Now, there's a three-word or six-word slogan that's worth hanging on to. I used a bit of poetic license for my own thing and just changed it to cattle, for country, for kids, just to give a sense of the succession that we look for. Sure, we could put in some other detail around cash, customers, consumers and plenty of other C words, but keeping the balance of our business across this spectrum is the key to surviving and thriving from the short to the long term. While we live with volatility in prices, in seasons, in staffing, in markets, the rash trade suspension of 2011 and the subsequent disruption proved we couldn't live long without market access. It threw cattle, country and kids wildly out of balance. Herd dynamics and pasture condition are still all over the place, and it'll take another decade at least before we get back to some sort of normality. In this respect, the class action must be prosecuted to reflect a suitable dollar figure that describes the chaos on and off property and ensures no government ever does that business to us again. And while the present market conditions offer the opportunity on property to play catch-up, reduce debt, invest in capital improvements, the need for us to continually improve in our animal and business productivity and our pasture condition and management remain paramount if this rosy point in time is not to be an ephemeral moment. We're lucky at home, at Sunday Creek anyway, to have great neighbours, I've got to say that, there's a couple here I think, and an optimistic, enthusiastic district. But we all have a landlord and we all have other sorts of neighbours on the same lease area. Native title holders, mineral and oil and gas explorers, as well as physical neighbours, Aboriginal lands and communities, parks, defence lands and a range of other visitors, welcome and otherwise. We also have close neighbours across the Timor Sea and beyond. The Pastoral Land Board under Richard Golden has acted in good faith with the pastoral lessees, and the increase in activities in the monitoring and communication areas are positively noted. The changes to the non-pastoral use sections of the Act appeared extremely positive, already creating several major innovative initiatives. I'd also like to acknowledge Richard's role and the industry members in the Wild Dog Review, which has reduced red tape and increased efficiencies in this significant threat to our animal welfare and productivity. Can I also mention Colleen Costello in this dispatch for her many years of contribution to the Pastoral Land Board, always bringing a practical and considered Centralian view to the Board's discussions. However, the use of the valuation process to equitably share the rental load and potentially rates across the pastoral estate remains an open wound. Once again, we're in the middle of a valuation process which includes reviewing of all of the unimproved carrying capacities and considering the inclusion of some improved grasslands as part of the process. Industry consultation continues, but I personally am unconvinced. We seem to spend an inordinate amount of time and money to allocate rentals and rates. It would seem much simpler just to remove the pastoral leases from the community local government system and stop pretending that we can effectively frame and track market movements between districts on a triennial basis. After 2 to 3 years of intensive discussion and negotiation, on November 30 last year, Chief Minister Giles announced a new era of access agreements for explorers operating on pastoral leases. And we acknowledge the work and effort of the Giles government in making this finally happen, along with the superhuman effort of our CEO, Tracy Hayes. We should not underestimate the leap forward this is for our industry in providing a basis for good faith negotiations and respect between pastoralists and oil and gas. Sorry, pastoralists and explorers. With respect to the oil and gas, which is a subject of an important session later on, I'm not sure that there's ever been a more important SWOT analysis that the industry is undertaking. The strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats of having energy explorers as neighbours and the potential for achieving balance will be tested in today's session. We at Sunday Creek have explorers for neighbours as we are part of about the 10% of the area of the NT that remains available for oil and gas exploration. I've heard of a whispering campaign that suggests that I and others in the association are in the pay of the oil and gas industry, so I'd like to clear that up for you just now. That's the income for Sunday Creek for last year. I've left the figures off because my bank manager's here. But as you can see, the other bit there is quite small and none of it comes from the oil and gas industry. But I've got to tell you, the only money I've made out of the oil and gas industry for a bit of time I spent sitting on the old 17K grader amounts to about 3 decks of cattle. I'm more expensive than that. You'll know when I'm in the pocket of the oil and gas industry when I've got a plane like Foxy Robertson, a boat like Paul Slotkowski. My wonderful wife has a gooseneck and a string of camp draft ponies like some of the famous Catherine camp drafting families. And I'm driving a brand new Maserati LeVant. Along with about 23 others on the Sturt Plateau, we've been negotiating and dealing with Pangaea Resources over a number of years and have been well informed on the science, technology and practical progress of the exploration process and any potential production plans. I can't help thinking that if the gas industry as a whole and the Northern Territory Government had been as communicative, open and as effective in dealing with the general public and landholders as Pangaea has been with the Sturt Plateau producers and traditional owners, that we might all be in a much better informed situation today. I'm very much hoping that Dr. Hunter's analysis, John Cotter's presentation and the panel session sheds a bright light on the practicalities and reality of how well the NT regulations can protect our cattle, our country and our kids. In addition to the mandatory land access agreements for pastoral leases, the NTCA's present policy also calls for the establishment of a regional royalty system for industry, community and landholders in the areas where mineral or oil development takes place. We call for the establishment of a system of adequate bonds in perpetuity to fully secure rehabilitation expenses and the rectification of negative impacts of any petroleum activity, and the need to establish a baseline monitoring data and maximum safeguards for water integrity both below and above ground through appropriate legislation and regulation. The Territory Government and the oil and gas industry need to prove to us in practical terms how safety, for water in particular, will be assured and how we can see that they are assured and monitored. And when something does go wrong, how it is detected and remedied in a timely manner. World's best practice and guiding principles are not explanations. How many inches of hardened steel? How far is the casing going past the water aquifer? Impressive monitoring and control systems that we can see and touch and understand will be much better. Is fracking under the aquifer like explosions we see in the iron ore mines, or is it something like somebody driving pickets in over the other side of the McDonnell Ranges? There's plenty of answers that need to be communicated because there is still a lot of people that don't know. There are too many issues in the Territory already of legacy mines, some estimating costing up to $1 billion to rehabilitate. So we can't proceed without understanding the real risk and return of this industry. On the other side of the coin, however, if we simply dismiss the opportunities on the basis of a zero tolerance for risk or a barrage of yellow triangular signs and imaginative three-word slogans, we're no better than those NIMBY mobs who react to a Four Corners show or a negative sign about live export on the back of a bus in town. Some will remember about 10 years ago, I think, this conference heard predictions that by 2015, oil would be in severe shortage, prices would be through the roof, and we urgently needed to plan to have natural gas as a transport fuel. We heard that technology was unlikely to help much. In reality, our power here today is from fracked gas, and the reduction of diesel prices is largely due to the massive expansion of the shale oil industry in the US. No discussion of northern development and the cattle industry is honest unless it considers the potentially tremendous opportunities of not only an assured supply of cheap energy, but the potential associated infrastructure gains to the NT and pasture industry that governments are failing to fund. But it simply cannot come at the expense of our resources at any cost. As neighbouring leases or as native title holders, Aboriginal people and pastoral people are an overlapping and closely related demographic in the NT. I heard Noel Pearson talking this week of how whitefella cattlemen needed to be less shy about their connection to country and their love and understanding of the land, their custodianship of it, and their ability to make better decisions about its management than interest groups or governments in southern capitals. I believe that most Australians know this of us as well. Pearson at the time was arguing about how Aboriginal landholders in the Gulf were being equally held back by government policies aimed to placate urban groups. It's now 50 years since the North Australian Workers' Union instigated proceedings in the Centralised Arbitration Commission calling for equal wages for Aboriginal workers on cattle stations, which in short led to the relocation of fit, healthy, proud communities to many of the present artificial surrounds that can suck the happiness out of many people. Last year we lost Alward Foster, a former STAR graduate and employee with the Real Jobs Program, to suicide when he returned to his own community. We can waste time saying I told you so and regretting there was not the ability to improve the flexible NT administration enforced enterprise agreements, as was suggested by the pastoralists of the day back then. Or we can be optimistic that 50 years later, happy, proud faces like these are still around and wanting to be back on the stations. An effort invested in this area will do far more than subsidising and imposing opal fuel on everyone. The NTCA's Real Jobs Program, funded through the Indigenous Land Corporation, has now trained and found jobs for over 300 young Aboriginal station hands. It's a credit to the staff who run it and the people who participate in it. I got to travel back to Indonesia last year for the launch of the NTCA, Indonesia Australia Pastoral Program Alumni, a project which continues to achieve great things in both countries. And it was great to be amongst all the happy, smiling faces there as well. I said at the launch that there are no better schools than an agriculture department at a university or a stock camp in the Northern Territory. And the growth in the young people from both backgrounds was an absolute joy to see and earns them and our industry a lot of credit. Amongst many others, I'd like to thank Robbie Augustar and R.M. Wahoo for their continuing work with this program. Too many times, local knowledge and needs have been placed second to national plans or campaigns, and the outcomes, recognised or not, can have negative impacts for decades and perhaps even permanently. Time forbids a listing of more, but a couple of current examples that I can think of are the national heavy vehicle rules and things like that, and the NBN, all of which are taking up a huge amount of effort to try and get the particular needs of the NT industry recognised and accepted. The federal fervour for northern development sounds impressive, but we continue to argue with Canberra, who, while prepared to hand over $1 billion to despotic island nations in case they sink with climate change, cannot maintain a weather radar in Tennant Creek. Beautiful rain across the north, just a big gap in the middle there where there's no radar to see it. But anyway, to get $100 million for road funding in North Australia, there's been 12 months of meeting and travel, engaging in consultation across three states, when the need for the NT alone is in the order of $2 billion. As David Warren argued last year, we will forever wither as a colonial outpost if we wait for population growth alone to promote development. The NTCA publicly supported the leasing of the port. As we know, the port will need to grow and become more efficient as we grow and continue to contribute to northern economies. Private southern investment in the north, especially agriculture, appears resolutely timid. Landline on Sunday reported that less than 0.3% of the trillions of Australian superannuation is invested in agriculture. The rest of this argument I'll leave to the next speakers. But back to the question of the business of balance. The conference is all about balance. It's balancing the opportunities and risks both within our enterprises and lives and with our neighbours and our communities and our trading partners. I've subtly hinted that decisions made without local wisdom and proper planning can have unintended negative consequences that can last for years or decades or cause opportunity to be lost forever. I also described the significant investment both on the ground and in R&D and marketing that's been undertaken by the industry to be in a position to take advantage of the present market opportunities. What we're looking for from our neighbours, and particularly the NT and federal governments, is the recognition that in our industry, where the environmental, market and production cycles are volatile enough, we do not need the volatility of sovereign risk or madly fluctuating policy changes added to our challenges. We ask that industry and investments not offered up to solve the consciences of the uninformed urban electorate or to jeopardise our cattle, our country or our kids by letting any of the neighbours wreck the joint. All good electronic cattle balances these days require a solid, stable platform and some smart dampening software to avoid the spikes and troughs, so that we can assure that at the business end of the weighing, the weight is right. These days we can even do that remotely. We desperately require our democratic processes to be equally stable and smart, even if they are remote. I hope you find the conference sessions informative and challenging, and at the end of the day we can agree that it is indeed a great time to be part of the Northern Territory and the Northern Territory cattle industry. Thank you.